Welcome to Take the Red Pill,
where we explore the realities within our reality.
We are your hosts, David Deere
and Donald Dalton.
This episode, we're going to be talking about the current and upcoming vibrational shifts. So I am going to shift it over to Donald. Go ahead, Donald.
Yeah, to me, my idea, or what I've heard with the vibrational shift, you know, people have heard about 2012 and it's supposed to be like the end of the world and the poles are shifting here and there. And I think it was our third episode we talked about 2012. But I've also heard about a shift in the singularity, which is basically when the technology, the computing power, have reached a level where they can actually become sentient, kind of like the whole Skynet thing, but in the Terminator. The current vibrational shift, I kind of look at it like this, where people have been talking about vibrations raising up faster and faster for decades, and I look at it just from, you know, my experience in the past like 20 years. To me, it definitely feels like things are getting faster and faster and faster. Like time is moving faster and faster and faster. And especially in the past 5 years, it seems like it doubles over on itself. Like things speed up twice as much in 1 year as they used to like last year. So I think...
Can you give me an example of that, of when you say time is speeding up? What does that feel like to you? How would you describe it?
Well, for example, you know, it's kind of like sometimes you get going with so much stuff that, you know, all of a sudden you peek your awareness out and it's like, oh my goodness, it's Thursday already. I still feel like my brain is back in Saturday. And so it's the awareness of the days and time moving and flowing by, because there were times when I was able to, you know, see, oh, it's Monday, okay, because Monday feels like this, and this is what we do on Monday, and then this is this day. And now there are some times where it's just like, oh my goodness, last time I did this, or last time I went to see a movie or got out of my, you know, rut, as it were, oh, that was like 8 weeks ago. That was almost 2 months. That only feels like it was maybe a month ago, but it actually was two. So I guess it's more of a perception of time speeding up, where you feel like the same amount of time that has expired is much more than what it used to feel like, say 10, 15 years ago, where the same amount of feeling of time was actually more in line with what you felt, how much time had actually passed. So,
well, I'm going to play devil's advocate on this a little
go
bit.
Go for it.
The first part of it is, I want to say, with the perception of time, you'll often hear, say, older people or elderly people say that time seems to be going by so much faster in their later years than it did when they were younger. Mm-hmm. So would you say that that might just be a reflection of the aging process?
I think that's definitely a possibility, but I've also heard from people who are still much younger, you know, the whole teenager to early to mid-20s, where they're talking about it speeding up much faster and faster as well. And so
they don't have as broad of a point of reference. They haven't been alive as long.
Exactly. And so that's kind of where, you know, I might get stopped up a little bit. It's like, how much of this is, like what you said, an age thing, and how much of it is, you know, possibly a vibrational shift or building up to a vibrational shift?
What does that mean, a vibrational shift? What do you think it means? How would you define it?
See, that's interesting, because this is one of those areas where I haven't spent a lot of time researching, but I kind of get the idea of what they're talking about. And for me, what people are talking about is basically like what we talked about in last week's episode with the Schumann resonance of the Earth, what it resonates at getting more intense, or, you know, upping the ante a little bit. Whereas I think, and I should have looked at this over the week, but I didn't. But I think we said like 7.43 or something is the current Schumann resonance. And to me, I think the vibrational shift is basically kind of like an increase in that. Are you familiar with Kirlian photography?
Mm-hmm.
So I think probably what it has to do is something with light and sound, the electromagnetic energy around every living thing starts to just get a little brighter or move a little bit quicker. You know, if we're talking about light, we'll look at a leaf under Kirlian photography, and let's say, you know, in 1974, it had an average of, you know, 10 lumens. And I know that's really low, but just for example's sake, that's what I'm going to work with. And now we look at it, and it might have like 12 or 15. And it's using the same amount of equipment done exactly the same way. Why would there be a difference with one leaf from over 30 years ago to a leaf that's looked at right now when you're using the same equipment and doing it the same way? And I think that's more of what a vibrational shift is, where it's just, it's shifting from one level of intensity to a different level of intensity.
Do you think that carries any inherent meaning with it? Or do you think it's just a shift that doesn't have any relevance?
I think it carries meaning in more of, you know, things work differently. It's kind of like, well, if you move from one place, one town that you like, where you grew up, and then you quote unquote shifted and moved your geographical location to somewhere else, like, and I'm not talking just a couple miles here. I'm talking like, let's say a minimum of 1,000 miles, then your new location is going to feel different. There's going to be different ways that, like, the climate might be different. The geography might, well, will most likely be different. So I think a vibrational shift is kind of like that, where it's like physically moving yourself from, you know, 1,000 miles from where your home base is, from where you know everything, how everything works, to someplace else that works similar but slightly different.
So you're saying that there's no necessary escalation or improvement or any kind of value judgment as far as that goes. You're saying it's a shift where things just change.
Yeah.
Things have a slightly different feel or phase or vibration or whatever.
Yeah, and depending on who you are, you can always put so much more onto something if you want to. I mean, you can talk about it saying, oh, we're becoming more evolved and we're becoming more, you know, this and that, and people are becoming more spiritually aware, and there's more love in the world, and this is what's causing the, you know, a shift. And that, you know, that could be totally possible, and I'm not disregarding that in any way, shape, or form. But I'm also looking at it from a more pragmatic view, where it's possible that, okay, this is what's happening. For whatever reason, it looks like it's happening. What are the implications, and how are things going to, you know, change from this? It seems like people are much more open. Well, it actually seems like everything is coming to a head in the past, like, 10 years or so, and it seems like things are escalating more and more, where, you know, you look at any 24-hour news channel. If you look at it objectively, you can see a lot of, okay, well, these people are over here doing this, and, well, you know, they say it's because of this, but we don't really know about that. And then you have specific people who have their own show, and they like to just really instill fear of, okay, politics of how the world is shaping up and everything. And then of course, you have the whole thing, like what happened in Egypt, where they were like, yeah, we're not going to take dictatorship anymore. Or what happened in Wisconsin with the labor parties and stuff like that, where the rights and privileges that I believe are inherent to each individual are not being able to be held down as much as they were in the past, because people just aren't taking it anymore.
I think it's not just the fact that they're not taking it anymore. The only reason I think they took it is because they didn't think that they had any control. But now I think that people are waking up to realize that they do have control, and that they can influence their environment and their world and the way they live.
And that's, in my opinion, a result of a vibrational shift, or a shift in vibration of, you know, people not feeling like they have control to, oh, we've shifted from, we'll just take it, there's nothing we can do, to, no, we're not taking this anymore. And to me, that is one example of a vibrational shift in, you know, in thinking and in feeling and what you're motivated and willing to do to accomplish a goal or to stand up for what you believe in. Is any of that kind of what you see for the upcoming vibrational shift that people talk about?
I think there's correlations to what you're talking about. I definitely think there's a correlation in how we are responding. The argument could be, well, there's been revolts throughout society and there's been empowerment throughout the society. For example, the forming of our country, not wanting to be under the leadership of the British crown, and the same thing with India or South Africa or any of those places. The argument could be that this is not necessarily indicative of a vibrational shift when this is something that we've seen going on for so long. However, I think it's part of the picture. I think another part of the picture of the vibrational shift is what we're seeing in our technology. Now, I want to be clear that I'm not saying that I think that the technology is the end-all to be-all with the vibrational shift. Like, for example, you talked about the Skynet idea.
Yeah, the singularity.
The singularity idea with the technology coming to this head of singularity.
Mm-hmm.
Well, technology really is an analogy as far as I'm concerned. And technology is really almost a crutch in a way, crutch to our true power.
Ah, I see.
And I think that the vibrational shift is bringing us into an area where we're really beginning to discover our true empowerment.
Mm-hmm.
Just like what's going on in Wisconsin and in Egypt and these areas where we're really saying, okay, we are the source of our own power. We can create these amazing things. And I think technology has led us to that point. I mean, we created the printing press, which was a big deal, but it kind of stayed like that for several hundred years. And then the gaps between each technological advance have just gotten shorter and shorter and shorter. And I think it's because we keep more and more accepting what our capabilities are, what we're absolutely capable of doing and becoming.
Kind of pushing the line a little bit further every time?
Yeah, absolutely, pushing the line. Seeing just basically how far, how creative we can be, and how far we can push the bounds of what we perceive as possible and as our reality. And I think the vibrational shift is all of this is staging to really open us up to expand past the paradigm of basic three-dimensional living.
Oh, so you're thinking more of vibrational shift kind of like into like fourth dimensional or above reality type thing?
I think so to a degree. I think it's a matter of our perception changing. Like, for example, we're seeing more and more people embrace the ideas of things that you can't really describe with science.
Can you give an example of that?
Well, for example, precognitive abilities, as for one. In other words, being able to see a future event in a dream.
I just read a study a few weeks ago where this professor has found a way to actually say, look, precognition can definitely happen, where he took a bunch of students and he basically showed them non-sexual and sexual images, recorded their brain waves or whatever, and what he found, and then he had a control group where he just showed them regular images.
I know this study. I read this, yeah.
And he actually saw that there was a little bit of brain activity changing of minute arousal a few seconds before the the sexual picture. You know, he's just like, well, this is more of a kind of a precognition thing. And I before then, I remember hearing about in the late 90s that pilots, jet fighter pilots, can sometimes, when they're dogfighting, can sometimes actually know where the their opponent that they're tailing, that they're trying to get a good sights on, are going to move, you know, half a second before they move it, so they can actually anticipate it and therefore stay in with them instead of flying by them. So I think science is getting to the point where it's being able to give more credibility to, oh yeah, we're finding ways to actually measure these examples of, you know, precognitive ability and other psychic abilities that we have not been able to scientifically prove to our satisfaction in the past.
Well, here's my problem with that, though. I love the fact that science can do this, but right now, what's as a result, we are still reliant on science to tell us what is true and what is not. We're still sitting there going, well, I'm not going to believe in psychic abilities or any of that kind of stuff until some scientist with dots and letters and empirical evidence shows me a chart and says, okay, now we validated it. Well, it was true before the scientist validated it, but now we give it credibility because the scientist validated it. I think the vibrational shift is going to allow us to embrace that part of us without having to depend on science to do so. Because right now, all these amazing advances in technology, and I'm going to strip it down by saying, me being able to talk to, I say this example all the time, me talking to a guy in China in real time, take away the technology, that's what I'm doing. I'm talking to a guy in China in real time.
Mm-hmm.
We're dependent on our technology to do that. However, it's an analogy to say that human beings are capable to fly. Human beings are capable to talk to somebody across the globe in real time. Human beings are able to do these things. And that's why I say that science is the crutch to it, because we depend on technology to do it just to make it believable, just to accept our creative power. So I think the vibrational shift is, all right, it's like taking off the training wheels. Or what do they call them now? They call them stabilizers, yeah. I think that's the term du jour. It's no stabilizer. I'm the new millennium daddy now. So,
so you're seeing a shift where, to a point where we may not rely so much on technology, where we can still do the same things that we have done with technology, like talking to somebody across the globe without a phone or a computer or any other means, just more like telepathy or something like that?
I'm not saying that we're going to have no more use for technology anymore. We'll continue to discover abilities that we have that will blow us away, but those abilities will not necessarily have to be reliant on technology.
I'm still trying to wrap my head around exactly what that would look like.
Well, let's see here. Let's use psychometry, for example. Okay. Right now, it's kind of a carnival sideshow idea, or it's, you know, these little backroom quiet ideas where someone can hold an object and tell you the history behind that object or the people associated with that object. Well, anymore, we're going to see more and more people that will have the ability to do this. Now, science doesn't really like it. Science kind of stays away from it, and the scientific community says, I don't want to be lumped in with witchcraft.
Yeah.
So, but yet there are people, we're seeing more and more shows on television, more and more talk shows, more and more books and movies and things like that, that address this, that are opening the way for us to be able to accept these abilities. I don't see where technology would allow us to do that. We're going to reach the limits of what technology is going to allow us to accept as possible. And we're going to be reaching into areas of what is possible that don't involve technology. Like, for example, remote viewing.
Mm-hmm.
That's something that they were doing, what, back in the 70s and 50s or whatever?
Yeah, yeah.
I don't remember. But it's not going to be so, I don't know about that. It's going to be, yeah, some people can do that. It's part of what we are able to do as human beings.
Yeah, when you were talking about relying on technology, I kept thinking about, okay, an example of a biofeedback machine. Because some people, it takes a lot to actually get in, connect to, you know, their body and how it's working. If you're set up to a biofeedback machine, you can train yourself to notice when you're in certain emotional, psychological states, and then have these techniques that will allow you to change them more to where you want. And when I keep getting the impression, and I think I'm wrong here, so correct me if I am wrong.
But
wrong!
Wrong!
What does the airspeed velocity of an airline swallow? Wrong!
Wrong!
but no, is what you're saying is not relying on technology, but still being able to come into our power. And I'm looking at it more of if, how do you learn? Because some kind of information has to be handed down or given to an individual in, or a group in one way or another that was produced or created by somebody else. And, you know, if you go way, way back, that was like the oral tradition where, you know, the elders would teach the stories of the culture and send it down to the children, and then they would become the elders and, you know, send it down to their children. And I understand the whole idea of, you know, our potential and, you know, our coming into our whole power, but most people have to be given the idea that that's possible to begin with. And I, that's where I'm looking at. Does someone just come and like, hey, you're powerful? I'm like, sweet.
No, I think it's just slowly but surely embraced. I mean, back, what, in the 70s, there were not any talk or television shows to this degree on these kind of extrasensory abilities or psychic abilities.
Oh,
or
but the thing is, kind of see, I have to take issue with that because we only had like 4, maybe 5 channels. We didn't have cable back in the 70s. And so, and I think that having cable, which is a form of technology, allowed enormous amounts of channels to spread out and therefore allowed various ideas to come in. Now, we did have a lot of books and stuff on these things. And so, I mean, that's me playing devil's advocate to what you said.
Well, we did have a lot of books today, but in your opinion, do you think these kind of things are more widely, they're more openly embraced today or back then?
Oh, definitely more today.
This is what I'm talking about. It's about how many people are willing to openly embrace it. It's about people just letting their guards down and not being fear-based. And I want to segue this a little bit because I want to talk about the whole fear-based thing.
Okay.
One of the things that I think the vibrational shift encompasses is a shift in our perception of who we are. And what I think that includes is our response to our own beingness.
Hmm.
What I mean by that is right now, we have been a fear-based society for a fear-based species, let me say, for a very long time. And fear, as we talked about in the fill in the blank
fear episode,
yes,
dun, dun, dun.
It's created greed and avarice and crimes and infractions against humanity have all, without exception, been fear-based.
Mm-hmm.
Because people are taking back their own power, that means that they are not allowing the machine of fear, they're not allowing themselves to be bought by the paradigm of fear. They're realizing that I really don't have anything to be afraid of when I look inside myself and realize that I am going to be fine, if that makes any sense.
Oh, yeah. I was thinking about this, you know, just the other day where you hear these stories from history where these people were just like, so willing to die and give up their lives for their cause, for what they believed in. This is just my personal perception right now. I think if you asked a majority of people right now if they would be willing to become a martyr for whatever they found important in at this point in their life, would they be willing to take that, you know, make that choice? And I don't think a lot of people would be at the same level of allowing themselves to become a martyr as, you know, some figures throughout history who have allowed themselves to do that for their cause.
Well, here's one of the issues I take with that is that we have created this paradigm that you have to be a martyr to prove yourself. The martyrs have actually been created by us. We have not necessarily created them. King had an amazing message, and I think what gave it more power and validity was his martyrdom.
Mm-hmm.
Kennedy suffered martyrdom. Lincoln suffered martyrdom. These are people that suffered martyrdom to actually, I think, excel and create their message and to show how much value was in it, that, okay, I could walk without fear because this was so important for me. I ended up having to risk my life as a result. Mm-hmm. And I think that paradigm has kind of been accepted, that martyrdom is part of the package. And unfortunately, the martyrdom idea becomes fear. Well, if I do have to stand by my convictions, then I do have to be willing to give up my life for that. When I don't think that's the case anymore, and I think that we can actually now start steering away from that, that you don't have to give up anything, that your convictions are inviolate. Because when you say, I have to give up something to show that my convictions are valid, you're creating an us versus them. You're creating, there is actually, in it of itself, creates an environment of fear.
Yeah. I look at it a little bit differently, where the psychology of what you just said, where I believe so strongly in, you know, my cause or what I'm into, that I would be willing to, you know, stake my life on it, literally. Instead of saying, I will present my life to you so that I can become a martyr for this cause. I think it's a different psychology than that, where it's literally, this cause, this idea of whatever I'm doing is so important that I would be willing to, you know, risk my life for it. I don't want to die, but if it happened in the whole scheme of of this cause playing out and working and evolving, then so be it.
And the reason I want to kind of shift away from that idea, and I appreciate the nobility of that idea, I really do. I know what you're saying. Mm-hmm. I know exactly what you're saying, that there is something that is so valuable to you that you would be willing to give up your life for it. To piggyback on that idea, when we go into our vibrational shift, this is what I think will shift, is that it's not even going to be about what you're giving up, because there is nothing to give up. So in other words, people will no longer say, well, I can show you how valid this is because I'm going to give up my life. Now they're just saying, it's just valid, period. What are you willing to give up? I don't have to give up anything. The value of what is valid to me is the value. There's nothing to give up because I have it already. Does that make any sense?
If I'm understanding you correctly, if you meet somebody who their whole life is music, let's say Sting or Bono, or somebody who has spent majority of their life making music for the masses and stuff like that, spending time with them, you get to peer into their why music
Sock
is
drawer?
Yeah, well, I don't know about that. You know, groupies and groupies and everything, you might be able to, but you know, I stole Mick Jagger's socks. But you get to peer into why music is so important for them and their passion for it, and then a little bit of that passion, you get to see if where it's just like, wow, I respect you completely for your complete devotion to, music, because I see how important it is to you. I see that for no other reason, you just love it. And if you were Sting and you were still playing, little bars here and there throughout the country and you never made it big, it's such a passion that you'd be doing it regardless. And, you'd be doing it regardless. And I think that's kind of what you're saying, where it's just like, you don't have to put your life on the line for what you believe and what you want. It's more of just people accept that is your passion and are more allowing, even if it goes against one of their beliefs or one of their likes or dislikes.
Absolutely. That's exactly what I'm saying. And it's passion is a big part of this, because I think it embraces it. But it's about knowing that you are who you are, and that can't be taken away from you. Right now, the environment of fear is based on the fact that we think that something's going to be at risk of being taken away from us. Mm-hmm. We think that we have to sacrifice something, or that something is at risk of being taken, and we can't have the life that we want to have. Where in the shift, I think we're going to embrace our isness again, where we will realize that we are what we are, and there is no risk. And the power structures and the power schemes, again, to talk about the power episode, they can only take the power that we give them. And when we realize, you know what, we're already empowered, and this advertising about, well, people will like you more if you buy my product or if you do, you know, subscribe to my service, they're going to realize, no, I'm who I am, and it doesn't really matter. So, you know, you can keep your soap. It doesn't mean anything to me. Then the companies are going to realize this isn't effective anymore. We can't use fear as a tool. I know it seems hard to relate to the idea of vibrational shifts, what I'm saying.
Mm-hmm.
But the reason I think that this is the case is because the veil is going to lift. We're going to be able to see what we are and who we are as not just a species, but as an existing entity. We're going to understand, because of the shift is going to help us to see what kind of spiritual beings we truly are. And when we see that we're truly spiritual beings, and that getting stabbed in the gut with a knife doesn't take away your spiritual beingness, that you continue in your spiritual beingness, is that what you are will always be. No matter how it changes, I mean, if you throw away the body and you're reincarnated, if you believe in that, you're still you. You're just in a different body. I mean, I am different than I was when I was 10 years old, but there's some things that are same, there's some things that are different. I think it's the same kind of idea. Your energy is still inviolate. And once we understand our energy is inviolate, then we'll realize that there's nothing we can fear of losing, because we don't lose anything. And once we realize we don't lose anything, we don't make choices based on fear.
The whole idea of shifting into like the fourth dimension, from our previous episodes, it would be a matter of being able to perceive fourth dimension reality, and then have whatever reality that creates, you know, would become our reality. And for me, my understanding of the main idea of fourth dimensional reality is thoughts and emotions become reality almost instantly, instead of having this little time lag in third dimensional reality where we have now, where kind of like if you want an orange, all of a sudden, boom, somehow an orange just is there.
Right, exactly. I would subscribe to that. I think that's quite possible with the vibrational shift. Because we're doing that now anyway, but we're kind of having to play through the mousetrap game, as it were.
Do you think that that's probably why the movie The Secret was so powerful, is because people were just like, you know, first off, it's like, oh, I can have what I want. This is a really cool idea. And if you watch the movie Inception, one of the most powerful things you can do is plant an idea into somebody's head. And that was kind of like planting an idea in the mass consciousness, regardless of what it turned out for some people. And, you know, there's people that say that, oh, that's not really a law, that's just people making money off of the gullibility of other people. But at the same time, I'm looking at it, whereas it had such a far-reaching effect, and it's still, that we're still feeling to this day, where more and more people know what the law of attraction is. And you don't have to say manifesting, you know, like you did, you know, 10, 15, 20 years ago, when it's like, oh, you know, creating our reality or manifesting. Now all you have to say is law of attraction. And with that word, people are like, oh, you mean like The Secret? And like, yeah. And I think that might have been more of like what you're talking about, where it goes to the 100th monkey rule, where so many people are getting involved with that and teaching it and understanding it and applying it. It gets to a point where we might actually hit a critical mass in everyone's belief system, where that is the point where we shift from kind of like third dimensional reality to fourth dimensional reality. And right now it's kind of like a sandbox of, let's play with this and see how it works in third dimensional reality, so that when we shift into fourth dimensional reality, knock on wood, if we shift on for the people that believe it or don't believe it, we won't be caught off guard, because the idea of having stuff instantly manifest and us be attracted to them and them be attracted to us would not be like just out of the blue. I mean, if you take somebody from that has never heard of the law of attraction or that you can create your own reality or anything like that. And then 1 second you have them in their life, and then you shift them into a place where every thought that they have, regardless of good, bad, or whatever, instantly manifests. I mean, that could be extremely shocking and terrifying, if nothing else.
I think the stage is set, and that it will not be so shocking. Because if you think about it, synchronicity, like we talked about, that is pretty quick happening stuff. When we see synchronicity, that is instant manifestation, is what it is. This, we are actually engaging in instant manifestation in a lot of ways, and technology is helping us to do that. I have an idea, I want to communicate it to someone across the globe, and they get it. We're manifesting that for all intents and purposes, but we're just using the technology training wheels. But as we get into the ideas, like you said, about The Secret and about the idea of manifestation, I think what we're going to realize is that what we think is what we create. So when we are fear-based in our thinking, we're creating the very things that we fear, and we'll understand our own responsibility in that.
Oh yeah, and from the current vibrational shift that from seems to have been going on for what, the past 20, 30 years or so, maybe 40, I think that's kind of like, I think that's why a lot of the status quo of the most powerful staying in power, we're starting to see that crumble a little bit more as time goes on, and more often, where 30 years ago, you know, we were still involved in the Cold War. And then all of a sudden, Russia was just like, eh, we're not doing this anymore. You all win. We're just whatever. And then, of course, the Berlin Wall came down. And then Saddam Hussein came down. And you're having all these very powerful, you know, leaders that a lot of people consider negative, and these negative ways of the world being constructed, you know, kind of falling apart. And then, of course, you have every so often, you can have this other side, the status quo as it's been for eons and eons, come back in. It's like well, with the banks, I'll take that for example here in America, where, you know, the whole bunch of financial institutions just decided that, oh, we have legislation that lets us play a little bit. Let's play. And like, oh, well, I'm sorry. We messed up. We didn't know it was coming. So can we have like a huge loan of money? And so that, you know, the whole world economy doesn't collapse in and on itself. And I see much less of that, and much more of the positive, what people consider positive, and more of, I think what you were talking about earlier, where it's getting more and more to what we might consider from our current perception of a utopia society, a utopian global species type thing, a human utopia. Would that be correct for what you were talking about earlier? Or?
Well, maybe to attain a utopia, you have to believe you're already in the utopia. For example, I believe my life is pretty sweet. Even when the things happen that I don't like, when things happen that are absolutely devastating, I still think life is pretty sweet. So as far as I'm concerned, I am creating a utopia in my own life. And that's what I think people will realize, that the utopia they create is going to be of their deciding. They have to decide if the life they're living is a utopia or if it is not. It's not that all of a sudden we're going to have, you know, this Elysium kind of idea with the fawn running around and, you know, butterflies in a Disney movie kind of backdrop. But more so that you realize life is pretty sweet, and life is golden, and life is good. It is that way because I'm creating it to be that way. I'm perceiving it to be that way. And a lot of people call me a Pollyanna. I'm like, all right, go ahead and cry in your beer if I'm a Pollyanna, because I'm smiling it. And I really don't drink beer very often, so that's it. You know, that's that. That's my perception, I suppose. I would say,
from my perception, the whole shifting, I don't know if it's going to happen in 2012 or if it's just going to be like a gradual, 1 week we wake up and it's just like, hey, you're talking to your buddies, and it's just like,
I think it'll be gradual. Yeah, that's my opinion.
Yeah, you wake up and it's just like, hey, did you you want to see something really cool? Yeah, it's like, I would like a $100 bill in my hand right now. Like, was that cool or what? Like, dude, how'd you do that? And some people that are more in line with that kind of belief system, that kind of reality, that kind of perception, are probably going to be more able to work in fourth dimensional reality easier immediately, whereas people that aren't going to be able to, but they will be able to bring people into it. Because it's one of those things, like, sometimes you hear weird things, like the podcast, one of our previous episodes, where you said there was this guy who didn't have any arms and legs and played soccer.
Right.
Or played a game of soccer.
Yeah, he was on a soccer field, and he made a joke about, I wasn't ready or something like that when the ball was kicked at him. Yeah.
Exactly. I mean, where you see more types of people like that, and people that may not have a few limbs here, and it's like, well, geez, if that guy can somehow get onto the soccer field and play a ball or whatever, then why am I sitting here complaining? Or, oh, I got a perfect example that both goes with the that will get me some serious cred on my geek card.
let's hear it.
The original Star Trek series. They had Michelle Nichols, who played Lieutenant Uhura, was a black woman in the late 60s.
She was her whole life, but...
Yeah, well, okay. The way I worded that, it came out a little bit off.
I know what you're saying, though.
Yeah,
black woman in the late 60s, I think is what you mean.
On a primetime science fiction, very popular TV show, there are people that, over the past few years that you can see interviews with them, and they're saying, you know what? It wasn't until I saw Nichelle Nichols playing Lieutenant Uhura that I'm like, oh my goodness, a black woman is actually on TV in, like a positive role. Because, I mean, you go back to what the national culture and everything was back in the, up to the 60s and stuff, it was much more pronounced racism and prejudice than it is now, by a long shot.
Well, Gene Roddenberry said that his intention with having a diverse, ethnically and culturally diverse cast was to represent a future where these racial barriers were broken down. And then he just did that not only in that show, but think about it, the first interracial kiss televised was through him. Whoopi Goldberg said that she loved Star Trek and decided she wanted to do The Next Generation because, as a kid, she loved the idea that black people were portrayed successfully and predominantly in the future.
Mm-hmm.
So, and that was very inspiring to her. So you're talking about kind of that kind of setting the tone for the future. Is that what I understand? Why we have a black president now?
Well, it's kind of like, it's kind of like one of what I was going with, where people that are able to, are much easier aligned with being able to work with the reality of like fourth dimensional physics and mechanics and how that works, where your thoughts and ideas and the law of attraction happens instantly instead of a little bit of this time lapse, being able to be inspired to the people that are still having difficulty with grasping onto that reality. And that's why I brought up the whole idea of Star Trek, because as soon as these people saw Nichelle Nichols on a primetime TV show that only lasted, of course, 3 years, but, it did a lot in 3 years. They were like, okay, I do not have to accept the reality I look around and see in the news, and I find myself when I'm here living in the projects or, where life is not equal to, I have to go to a certain school over here because I can't go to the better school that over there and get, a better education because, whatever. That one little seed, that one little shining piece of light says, you know what? If she can do it, why can't I?
Yeah, it was an interesting what you said about people saying that I don't have to accept what I see in the news and what I'm seeing in my environment. It was really interesting that you said that. In fact, it made me think of the interview a few years ago with Morgan Freeman.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know if you saw this. He was being interviewed by Mike Wallace, and they were talking about Black History Month, and Morgan Freeman said, "Why do I get a month?"
Yeah.
He says, "What about White History Month?" And he says, "Do you want a White History Month?" And he said, "No." And he said, I don't want a Black History Month." That when he asked about dealing with racism, he said, "Well, we just need to quit empowering it by giving it so much focus," which is basically by this whole definition. Well, you're a white person, I'm a black person, I'm a white person, you're a black person, you're a Korean person, I'm an Asian person, et cetera, et cetera. When you're constantly focused on that, then you give that distinction power, and you give a distinction that you are different from somebody else that does not belong your race to your race.
Mm-hmm.
So when you attract things into your world, when you're constantly watching, you know, negative event after negative event, when you're a person that goes and looks on the internet for every single news story about what atrocity somebody did, what horrific act somebody did toward another person, you're helping to continue and resonate that very frequency.
Oh, yeah.
And you're actually creating it. And I think we're going to get to a point where we realize that what we are focusing on is what we are creating. But a lot of people say that that's outside themselves. And I think the vibrational shift will help us to see that everybody is a reflection of ourselves. Everyone is a reflection of ourselves. That what we see other people do has a lot to do with who we are as a human being. That is just an aspect of us that we're seeing. And I think the veil will come down as this begins to shift, and our behaviors will change accordingly.
Yeah, and for me, I look at it as living more out of a lifestyle, creating a reality and having experiences that are more based on love than out of fear. And those are very, very simple terms that are thrown around all the time. But you look at the implications, you can look at history and see, okay, this was done out of fear, 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 and it changed the world like this, and it changed the world like this. And I was like, well, you know, if we go to the polar opposite of that, then, you know, and we live and make decisions and desire, you know, a world that is based on love instead of fear, then we do have that vibrational shift from fear to love, which then creates, you know, more what majority of humanity would consider more empowerment to us as individuals and us as groups and us as nations. And I think this is where the technology comes in to allow others to see the perception of, like with Star Trek and Nichelle Nichols, you know, being able to allow other people to see, hey, here's an idea. You can run with it, or you don't have to. Find where your allegiances lie. Find where your passion lies, and then, you know, live and move your life into alignment with your passions and your beliefs as strongly as you possibly can, because then you'll be an example of not necessarily what you're doing, but who you're being. And I think that, to me, is probably a better example of what we're talking about with the current vibrational shift and the, you know, dun-dun-dun, upcoming vibrational shift, where people are just becoming more empowered. They're not saying, I can't, as much. They're saying, how can I do this?
So then what happens to the people that live in fear? What happens to them through the vibrational shift?
See, I think there are some people that the shift will happen, and
the shift is happening. Well, I don't throw of a switch.
Yeah.
I like to believe that. I think it's easier to digest than it is to think that 2012, December 21st, and because it's never worked like that. So
12 o'clock midnight.
Right.
Yeah. I think that goes back to what I was talking about earlier, where the people that are much more in line with the current vibrational shifting, they're able to say, hey, look, this is what I did. And like, well, yeah, but you're special. I'm like, no, I'm not any more special than you. I just had the desire and the passion to go for it. And, you know, I never gave up. It was so much a part of who I am and what I love that I just had to go for it. And, you know, you hear this in boxing films all the time. It's just like, if he has the heart, then he'll win. If he doesn't have the heart, then he's already lost the match. I think that's more of people that have the heart, have the passion, making it and living their happiest version of their life, and then other people seeing them, seeing that they were able to do it, then it's like, wow, that's inspiring. I mean, Oprah Winfrey, one of the most powerful women in media, and possibly one of the most powerful women in the world, you know, did not come from a nice, you know, upper middle class family. No, she started off, if you've looked at her biography, pretty down there, pretty at the bottom from what a lot of us would consider. And she followed her passion, she followed her desires, she I believe she's been in tune with her spirit for, you know, most of her life, if not all her life. And I think we talked about this in our first episode in astrology, if I remember correctly. You know, she is a shining example on many levels. For one, women being able to be empowered. You know, black women being able to be empowered. She blew racism and gender stereotypes out the window with where she's gone and where she's ended up and where she started from. And there's story after story after story of all these people that have followed their passions, and it's just like, this is what I'm doing because, you know, that's just what I got to do. There is
now. I want to stop you there for just a moment, because I do want to use the Oprah example, and she has shown that despite what the paradigms of the society may show as being possible, that she is creating the life that she's envisioned for herself in spite of that.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the reason I'm saying this is because she is considered one of the most powerful women in the world.
Mm-hmm.
But she's not really any more powerful than any other woman in the world.
Exactly.
And this is the point that I want to make about when we get into a shift, we're going to realize that the idea of what is powerful will no longer be represented by how much money you have and how well known you are and all this other stuff. That everybody is just as powerful as the next person. That our perception of power is going to be completely different. That it's not indicative of any of the things that I just mentioned. That power is something that we are inherently bestowed with just by being alive.
Oh, yeah. I agree with that completely, because I think that is the epitome of what we're talking about when we're talking about a shift. And correct me if I'm wrong from your perception, but from my perception, it looks like that is probably the epitome of what we're talking about, where we stop thinking that, oh, they must have something that I don't, and that's why they're in the limelight, that's why they're in the spotlight, that's why they've reached these different levels of, you know, what people consider awesome or cool or whatever, right. And start realizing, you know what, they're not the only ones that have that power. Every one of us has, you know, our own power, our own nuclear power plant sun inside of us powering our life, and we have that same amount, but it goes back to, you know, do we act upon it, or do we allow ourselves to stay where we're at based out of fear and what people tell us, or like what Chessie was saying, what our committee, the people that we hang around with, tells us that we're able to do and what we're not able to do. I think that is a perfect description of vibrational shift and whatnot. And would you agree with that?
I think so. Yeah, absolutely.
Cool. So for TakeTheRedPillPodcast.com, I am Donald Dalton, wishing you good vibrations.
and this is David Deere ending my shift.